This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, June 3rd, 2022. I'm Caleb Brown. It's been more than 30 years since an anonymous lone man stood down tanks in Tiananmen Square. And yet for the Chinese government, that event still loudly resonates. When Robert Anthony Peters was seeking screenings of his film Tank Man, which tells the story of how that iconic man's day might have looked, he discovered that the long arm of the Chinese state has incredible reach. We spoke in April in Las Vegas. A few years ago, you made a short film called Tank Man. And it's interesting because we know nothing about that man who stood in front of that tank at Tiananmen Square. And you sort of imagined what his day might have been like and how he might have just been a normal guy who was fed up and decided to take matters into his own hands. And of course, when Ed Crane, who created the Milton Friedman Prize for Advancing Liberty, when he talks about who should receive that prize, that's the image he goes to, is a man standing in front of a tank, moving to one side as the tank tries to go around him. I mean, really, just in the boldest possible way, saying, you're going to have to kill me. I mean, really. And so you made this film, and there were problems before and after making it that highlight the degree to which China exerts its influence around the world.
Yes. Well, of course, that image is an inspiration, as you were saying, not just Ed Crane, of course, or to folks in the liberty movement, but to people around the world. There's a great documentary about the Tiananmen Square protests and massacre that had an interview with a journalist who said he was in Berlin later that year and interviewing people who were rushing up to the wall with sledgehammers. And he asked one fellow, hey, why is it you think you can go and do this? And he said, if that Chinese guy could do what he did, then so can we. I mean, so this is an incredible global inspiration. Of course, in everywhere, as the prophet is not recognized in his homeland, except for mainland China, who refuses to recognize this event for what the rest of us see it as.
Well, really, even that it occurred.
they did about a year after they aired this footage on government news. And they said, we're showing you this because we want to display how wonderful and restrained our great military is, in that this insane man walked in front of the tank and they chose not to run him over. Now, I will give credit to the man in the tank for his level of humanity, that he was not willing to run them, that gentleman over. And I think this is one of our causes for optimism, that there are both sides. There is the bravery to stand in front of the tank, and there's the bravery to violate something he very clearly could have done, which would have been, I'm sure without repercussions, he could have ran that man over.
So you had this film screened in the U.S. and attempted to have it screened in China.
Well, that's true. I did submit to Chinese film festivals. In fact, I was informed that I was accepted to a film festival in China. However, I could not get any details about whether that actually occurred or not. And I'm quite confident that it did not occur.
It was not a real film festival?
Yeah, possibly. But, they certainly took my entry fee, which is not uncommon with film festivals anyways.
So what were some of the issues that sort of surprised you in making this and before and after?
Yeah. So, production went as production normally does with films, which, is a combination of disaster and triumph and everything in between. But the real fascinating part was when I was casting, and I wanted an all Chinese cast to have a sense of authenticity to the story. And much to my surprise, which, thinking back, I shouldn't have been surprised in any way, but many actors emailed me before, some before even auditioning, but some before callback, saying, you know, I can't even consider doing this project because I am either from China and need to go back at some point, or I hope to visit China someday and I'm an American, or I have family back in China and I'm concerned about the repercussions to them if I do this project. And this is something that, you know, much as we may challenge freedom in the US at times, and there's very valid reasons to do so, nobody thinks twice about doing an anti-Trump film or an anti-Biden film or any number of a host of, especially of historical treatment, you know, to make something that maybe would challenge American policy, you know, with the Indians during the 1800s or civil rights and how that might have been handled. I mean, we're used to doing things like that, but these people understood there are grave repercussions for challenging the dominant narrative in China.
And to be clear, you shot this in Los Angeles. It's not like you shot this in mainland China.
No, that never would happen. As you probably know, you know, even if you Google Tiananmen Square massacre or try to do some sort of online search, especially when you're in China, you won't come up with any of the images that we can come up with in the U.S. You will just get pictures of Tiananmen Square at peace.
So what about after?
So after we encountered some fascinating results as far as submitting our film to film festivals, we've gotten great reception at many film festivals and garnered a lot of awards. Just in a variety of them, a variety of themes and locations in the U.S. The festivals I was convinced we'd be in a shoe-in for were the Asian American film festivals, which there are a number of them in San Francisco and Boston and, you know, in towns you that would shock you in the U.S. There's a good number of them. And I submitted to each one of those. I was only accepted to one, which was the Houston Asian American Pacific Islander Film Festival. And I was rather stunned by that because here's a story that is set in China, has an all Chinese cast. This to me was perfectly built for Asian film festivals because, I mean, you know, there's a lot of indie films and short films that are made, but how many are geared specifically towards that subject matter? Not a tremendous number, but the fact that we were not accepted to any of those except for one was staggering to me. And this is somewhat highlighted by, I live in Tucson, Arizona, and I wanted to hold a screening on the anniversary on June 4th, 2019, the 30th anniversary. And so I contacted, we have a very beautiful Tucson Chinese cultural center there. And I had sent them an email requesting to use their auditorium that evening for a screening of a film. And they said, yeah, absolutely. We'd welcome that. We've got an opening. Terrific. Email back and forth a couple of times. And then they ask, so, you know, what is it that you'd like to screen? I said, well, I made a film and this is what it's about. To this day, I can't get them to respond to a phone call or an email.
So your experience is not unique.
I recognize that.
And especially in the context of people who've made films.
Yeah. There was a counterpart who was making a film at the same time I was dealing with The Great Leap Forward. It's a beautiful film called Empty Skies. I urge you to check that out as well. And they were student filmmakers, so they are eligible for all sorts of other things, including a student Academy Award, and they were shortlisted for that. They could not get accepted to any Asian American film festivals either.
If I'm not mistaken, Empty Skies is about it's sort of a story, a true story, about efforts to eliminate pests from the air that was undertaken by Mao's government, and the shall we say, negative consequences of having done that.
Yeah, it's a tragedy, and it's a period of time they still refer to as the time of natural disasters, which of course it was anything but. This was Mao's brilliant idea to eliminate what they considered a pest, the sparrow eating grain. But what he failed to recognize is that more important than grain, the sparrow eats the locusts, which of course, without their predator, the locusts consumed the grain in staggering quantities, leading to
it's a pretty stunning story. So they found themselves with, you know, tremendous reviews. People really liked the film, and then what? Nothing. Just extreme difficulty trying getting it screened anywhere.
Oh yeah, I mean we all kind of rely on our friends, as it were, in the world to kind of share the word about our films, because there's all these official channels that are too afraid to display the films that we've made. And of course, this is, you know, there's bigger Hollywood stories of this, you know, the Chinese both funding of Top Gun and the anticipated distribution in China of Top Gun caused them to take that iconic leather jacket and remove the Japanese flag and the Taiwanese flag, because these would prove to be offensive to Chinese funders and the Chinese market.
Yeah, I recall years ago, I saw a movie, I believe it was called The Manchurian Candidate, with Frank Sinatra, yes, among others. Angela Lansbury, I think, was in that as well. And then they remade that movie. And the bad guy wasn't China. It was a corporation called Chi-Com Global.
Yeah.
And so this was an American company. And yes, so that, you know, that that movie was reframed so as not to make, you know, a totalitarian government the bad guy. And then I can remember Red Dawn having been remade in such a way that I think they were set on having China be the bad guy in that movie. Of course, the Soviet Union was the bad guy in the original Red Dawn, which of course is very controversial at the time as well. But North Korea.
Yeah, which of course is absurd, right? That North Korea, I mean, they can barely patrol their borders, let alone invade a foreign land across an ocean. But as we've seen from Xi Jinping's military parades on the 80th anniversary, I mean, China is building their military to staggering levels.
What does your experience tell you, or what should people take away from your experience having, you know, tried to make a film and then having witnessed other films? These are short films. These are not like stunning assaults on current events. The event that you depict in your film was almost 30 years old. The film of Empty Skies was 60, 70 years old.
70 years old. Yeah. We're telling stories that we would consider to be way back in history. But so let me come at this from a slightly different direction. I had originally wanted to make stories that attacked the Soviet Union. And, you know, that really, to me, I feel like academia neglects the horrors of that time and place. And I really wanted to tell stories about the Gulag. But I looked and said, there's a continuity of that government that has never had to apologize, has never changed from its actions at that period. And to this day, either denies them or ignores them. There's no sense of needing to apply for an apology, to ask for forgiveness, to no mea culpa. I mean, this is just, I mean, even Khrushchev, you know, had some small conscience that he was able to say, you know, yes, we shouldn't have done this, that had yet to happen with China. And so to me, it's important that we do this. And the fact that even projects so small as that we have created, the tiniest possible threat has gotten slapped down, to me, just shows that it is that much more important that we do more of these. And that we continue to poke the bear on this issue.
Robert Anthony Peters is the producer-director of the short film Tank Man, which you can have screened at your pleasure. We spoke in April in Las Vegas. Subscribe to and give a rating to the Cato Daily Podcast on your podcast platform of choice, and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.